Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm really excited to tell you about our Hajj Safarnama. This year we're talking about the Russian Hajj, and the book under the microscope is Russian Hajj, Empire and the Pilgrimage to Mecca by Professor Aileen Kane. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to our Hajj Safarnama 1437 Hijri, where I'm reading from the book Russian Hajj, Empire and the Pilgrimage to Mecca by Aileen Kane. The second excerpt is from chapter 2, Mapping the Hajj and Integrating Muslims. And here the author of the book writes about the problems that were faced by the Russians who were trying to control the Hajj. Had many people just moving from the Caucasus using Russia's support infrastructure and then just skipping over to Ottoman lands. I'm reading now from page 58. Many Hajj pilgrims from Russia were educated Muslims with the means and the connections abroad to ease their journey. The Hajj memoirs they wrote give us some sense of how these elites experienced the Meccan pilgrimage in these years, as well as their experience of Constantinople. What is perhaps most striking when glancing through the pages of these memoirs is the absence of problems. There are few mentions of shady brokers and crooks lurking in the shadows of Constantinople streets ready to pounce on hapless Hajj pilgrims. Such mentions fill pages of reports on the Hajj from the Russian embassy in these years. Perhaps this is due to a retrospective whitewashing of the journey, but it also surely reflects the unique experiences of the city by Russia's Muslim elites, who are often educated, well-traveled, sophisticated, and multilingual, and no less importantly, plugged into an extensive network of scholars and immigrants in their institutions in Ottoman lands. They arrived in Constantinople with a list of names in their pockets and had local contracts to guide and lodge them in the city. This shielded them from many of the unpleasant situations that their poorer compatriots suffered. It also meant that elites rarely appealed to the Russian consular authorities to help abroad and often evaded their detection and influence. But the vast majority of Hajj pilgrims from Russia in these years were not elites. They were poor, illiterate, and traveling long distances for the first time in their lives. Not surprisingly, these were the types of pilgrims that most Russian embassies and consular officials encountered in the Ottoman imperial capital, thus contributing to their conflation of the Hajj with poverty, disease, and disorder. Hajj pilgrims who showed up at the Russian embassy hailed from Muslim regions across the Russian Empire, with the greatest number coming from the Caucasus and Central Asia. The Russian ambassador in Constantinople and his consul general received scores of requests every year from poor Muslim pilgrims stranded in Constantinople. Many had been robbed and were staying in damp, dirty inns where disease was rampant. Their desperate situation was an embarrassment for the embassy. Crowds of pilgrims gathered outside the embassy gates to beg. Russian consulates in other parts of the Ottoman Empire also reported begging by Hajj pilgrims, most of them from the Caucasus. The viceroy in Tiflis regularly received correspondence from Russian consuls posted in eastern Anatolia about Hajj pilgrims who had come to the consulate to beg for help. Most of these pilgrims had been robbed or simply ran out of money, and many had no passports or papers to prove they were Russian subjects. Russian consuls spent large sums to get them home. They bought them steamship tickets, hired guides to escort them along land routes, and bribed quarantine and custom officials on their behalf. They wrote to the Russian viceroy in Tiflis to ask for reimbursement. This problem was not unique to Russia. Increasingly, over the second half of the 19th century, poor Muslims, most colonial subjects, were undertaking the Hajj without sufficient funds. To cover their costs, some hired themselves out as servants to wealthy compatriots headed to Mecca. Others took jobs along the way. But many also began to show up at European consulates to beg for money. This pattern suggests a certain resourcefulness on the part of Muslim colonial subjects who had begun mobilizing their status as European subjects and taking advantage of the new diplomatic institutions and services available to them for support in making the Hajj. Europeans faced the costly problem of repatriating poor pilgrims who were stranded in the Hijaz with no money and no way to get home, and tried different strategies to address it. In 1897, on the 60th anniversary of Queen Victoria's ascension to the throne, British Indian Muslims in Jeddah set up the Jubilee Indian Pilgrims Relief Fund, a charity fund to help poor pilgrims overseen by the British Consul. Also in the 1890s, a disagreement developed between the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the colonial government in Algeria over who should cover the mounting costs of repatriating indigent pilgrims to Algeria. The Ottomans' inability to control the Hijaz and secure routes for pilgrims opened up opportunities for Europeans to intervene. When in trouble, Muslims often asked for consular intervention. In the 1880s, a group of 28 Muslims from Singapore in Makkah wrote to the British consul, asking him to secure their route from Makkah to Jeddah, and said they were being extorted in Makkah. This is not what the European powers had in mind in offering consular services to their Muslim subjects headed to Mecca. They had hoped to gain more supervision and control over the Hajj traffic by getting pilgrims to register their passports with consulates. Instead, they were finding that pilgrims often showed up only to demand money. This drained the limited resources of foreign consulates and created conflict within European governments about how to solve this growing problem.